Hold on. I think that could, that's working. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Not too bad. How are you?
Good, 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 good. Hey, Alec, I've got a podcast about albums, and what we're doing is asking people for their recommendation. Hopefully it's an album that Tim and I haven't heard before, haven't listened to the whole thing through. And the idea is that we sort of both sitting around one day and went, you know what? We haven't sort of like listened to a whole album for so long. We just wanted to get back into that. So that's the conceit of this podcast that we're doing. So the rules are we ask somebody for an album recommendation, then we go away and listen to it, and then we do like a review podcast on it. So have you got a recommendation for us?
I have, yeah. I was thinking long and hard for the last 30 seconds, and I've got one that I don't think you probably would have heard. It's a bit of a curveball, I think.
Okay.
But it's the film score from Fantastic Beasts. I don't know whether you've seen that film.
No, I have definitely seen that film.
Oh, nice. Me and my mate Dave, we went to see the film when it first came out, and then we both listened to the album at pretty much the same time. And then we went to see the composer of the album as well, James Newton Howard.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, and so you would put this album on when you were just at home, let it play from beginning to end. You love every bit of it. This is an album that you wouldn't skip any songs.
No, I there's a couple on there potentially that aren't as good as the rest, but generally I'd say most of the tracks on there give you sort of a, I don't know, like a warm feeling. It sort of makes you feel fantasy-ish. I don't know whether that's a word.
But
I sort of get that. Obviously I was a massive Harry Potter fan as well. It's hard to explain, but yeah, I'm most of my music taste is orchestral stuff, which is a bit different, but it was either going to be this or some heavy metal album that I was going to recommend. So it's like both ends of the spectrum, really.
There's probably a good chance we'd heard the metal one. The one thing I have sort of been saying to people is, like, is this an album that if you were doing stuff around the house, you just had to get some get the washing done and a bit of cleaning and tidying done, is this the album that you might stick on the background and just go for it?
Yeah, I pretty much listen to whatever. Music's one of those things that it can alter your mood, or it depends on what mood you're in as to what you listen to, I suppose. But this sort of album, I'd stick it on any time, really, because it's got sort of like dark sort of moody tracks in it, and it's got light sort of fun sounding tracks. It's one for sort of all emotions, really. So you can wash up to it, or you can Uber, but you know,
or you can recreate your favorite fantasy scene in your bedroom.
Yeah, just as long as no one's watching.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Alex. You want to give the show a plug?
So I'm from a podcast called The OCP. So if anyone wants to check out that, we do sort of silly games, have a few guests on every now and again, and just generally have a laugh. There's no real structure to it, I suppose. But yeah, come check us out. We're OCP pretty much everywhere.
All right. Okay. Thanks for that, Alex. That's awesome.
Thanks, Tom. Cheers.
So, Tim, yeah, this is not the podcast I expected to be doing. I thought that we might be doing stuff like old obscure albums written by some long-lost rock god that only aficionados know about, and they're only available on vinyl. Instead, we're doing Harry Potter.
Yeah, we're essentially doing Harry Potter. Yep, no, we've definitely gone off on a different tack this time. But interestingly enough, even though it might not be a mainstream artist, it's still something that I guarantee almost 80% of the listeners out there have actually heard. So it's interesting.
Yeah, oh, that's an interesting point. I guess, yeah, I've seen Fantastic Beasts. I saw it when it came out. I've got kids, which is my excuse at my age.
I don't have an excuse. I just wanted to watch it. I don't even think the kids have seen it.
But Alex is only in his 20s, so he did grow up with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and the Harry Potter universe. I can only sort of tangentially feel that. I'm trying to think of something else, something that I grew up with that would resonate like that. I don't know. It'd be like Round the Twist or Old Sesame Street or something. Oh, like, I don't know.
Monkey Magic, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. So diving into this was a different beast altogether. pun intended.
So obviously this one that we've got this week is the 2006 film, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. What would you call it? The offshoot of the Harry Potter or the next chronicle?
It's kind of like a prequel. It's in the universe. It's a story within the universe. It involves some of the characters. Well, Dumbledore, that's it.
While still being deeply involved in the Harry Potter world, it's really nothing much to do with Harry Potter at all, which is kind of nice and refreshing. Taking on a whole different timeline, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and some of that was in some of the thinking behind the album. But we'll get into that. So it's an orchestral album. That's just the way you do a Harry Potter album, from what I understand. We all know what a wizard album sounds like. And
it's got all the greatest wizard hits.
Yeah, this one is very much that. But how did you find listening to a movie soundtrack? Okay, we're experts now in listening to albums with no lyric. We did Polyphia. That was great. So this is a movie soundtrack. What do you think going into this?
Well, it's a tough one because there are no lyrics, because it's not so much a song in the fact that it transitions through the normal things that a song would do, but, you know, the intro, verse, chorus, bridges, all those sorts of things. Rather than that, it's music that it evokes emotion. It sets up scenery in your head as well as, you know, obviously what you're capturing visually. But just to listen to it, it's interesting. It was a bit of a hard listen to get into at first. I really sort of had to sit down and focus on it. And then, of course, I married it up to the film afterwards, and everything was just like so much more coherent, and the reason the orchestra's doing this part and why it's building and ebbing and flowing. But you can sort of get those visual images in your head, even just listening, even when you've got parts of a song that are all nice and easy, free-flowing, and then all of a sudden there's this mischievous scurrying kind of music starting to build, and then all of a sudden something dramatic happens, and this, you know, the orchestra comes in with a big crash, and you almost, without even having watched the movie, you're setting up these visual scenes and have a bit of an idea what is actually going on in the film if you've never even seen it before.
It's an interesting one, because if you do any type of film course, even just your home video course online, they'll tell you that music and soundtrack, it's 50% of the film, especially after in the edit.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, if you try and watch a movie with no soundtrack, it's almost impossible. It really helps with cueing and pacing, and it's telling the story, just the music, as much as the visuals and the dialogue.
Absolutely.
In a good film.
Yeah, 100%, especially stuff like this, which is so action and fantastical and all this amazing imagery that's happening, and, you know, none of it's actually real anyway. It's all computer-generated, but, like, the two of them just working hand-in-hand, you could not have one without the other. Well, you sort of can if you're just listening to it, but if you wanted to be a part of that movie spectrum and everything involved in what you're seeing and what you're hearing, the two are not mutually exclusive at all. They're completely necessary, independent on each other.
So, this album, composed by Mr. James Newton Howard, what an interesting cat this guy is. You don't know him, but you do, because he's been the composer or co-composer on over 100 films. Before that, he had a short career for a couple of years as a session muso, working with the likes of Diana Ross and Ringo Starr in the early 70s. And then his big break came where he got picked up by Elton John in 1975 and became part of his touring band.
That was piano, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, playing piano. And he arranged strings for several of Elton John's songs, including Don't Go Breaking My Heart. So, yeah, the guy's got chops from way back. And then essentially what happened was he was asked to write a film score. Why can't I say film score? He was asked to write a film score for a small-time movie. He basically switched careers then and has since done, like I said, over 100 movies, including...
Well, you might have a little bit of an inkling back to pretty low, unknown movie called Pretty Woman.
Oh, yeah, there's that one.
Pretty Woman. What else we got? We got Fugitive. Did the soundtrack for that, which
How
is
good
all
is
about
that one?
Running
around. That one's banging. The Fugitive,
absolutely.
What a great film.
That's all about tension, that film, that soundtrack. Complete opposite of that, Space Jam, about as goofy as you can possibly get. But, you know, and then King Kong, The Dark Knight.
He did with Hans Zimmer, co-composed The Dark Knight.
That's right. Yeah.
But, hey, he's up in that rarefied air with Hans Zimmer and now...
John Williams and John all Williams. Those insane...
Yeah. Yeah. He did some, not all of his movies were bangers, but his soundtracks were. He was involved with Waterworld.
Case in point.
Case in point.
Almost all of the M. Night Shyamalan films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worked a lot with him.
Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah. All three of the Hunger Games. I Am Legend. The range is weird because he'll have a crack at anything, and it's not all what we're getting with this album, which is interesting because it's not always all strings and full orchestra. Like, some of those Absolutely, other soundtracks yeah. don't have that at all.
No, not at all. I mean, like things like Hunger Games and that was like, you know, heaps of massive sort of synthy and modern type music and programmed drums as well as orchestrated pieces to keep them together. And his body of work is so diverse.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's just mental.
How do you get that good at writing stuff that you can just, they can throw you at anything and just go, you do this and they're up for it. It's much like you got, you know, for this one, you know, he was up against some major composers and everyone had to submit their own little pieces to basically win the right to do it. And I think there was no question of a doubt that they went the right path with him.
Well, he started classical piano lessons at 4. I think that's how you...
I
guess that's how you do it. You just you learn from an early age the ins and outs of music. But to be that versatile and adaptable, being a session muso, I guess you've got to develop that and have chops, or you don't have a career. And he was well on the way to working with some great people and then made the switch to movies. He obviously found something that he could lean into even harder.
Yep.
You must watch the same interview as I did with Mr. JNH, James Newton Howard.
JNH.
Was it the one where he's talking about, having to send in an audition? You know, someone's going like, well, so how do you get the gig? It was basically somebody talking to him at the premiere and just doing a big interview. Prior to that, despite having done over 100 movies, he wasn't big on interviews. At no point was he looking for much celebrity.
Okay.
And he was sort of forced to do it, being attached to the Fantastic Beasts, which is a huge franchise.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about the process of writing this album, and he made it sound so easy because John Williams had done the Harry Potter soundtrack. It's iconic. You've got the Harry Potter theme, what everybody thinks of as the Harry Potter theme. I think it's called Hedwig's Flight.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. And so he's like, well, we all know what it sounds like. So that was the sound, and then I had to come up with stuff appropriate for the story and for the setting, which was New York. So everything sort of, all the songs on this album sort of lean towards that setting, that sort of, is it 40s, 30s?
Yeah, 20s or 30s, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, sort of New York. There's lots of underground, jazzy, sleazy stuff in there. Just elements everywhere of that type of thing. He's talking more about that process than, oh, how'd you come up with the orchestral score and stuff? Well, that's what it's got to sound like. I can do that stuff. Let's talk about, you know, painting a picture here.
Exactly. And that's exactly what he had to do as well. I think he did actually work on like the last 3 Harry Potter films as well. So he kind of had that sort of steeped in his background as well. But he was saying the biggest, it wasn't a hurdle for him, but what he had to do was musically create a world that was so Harry Potter, but separate from Harry Potter.
But not, yeah.
You know, you're watching something that's going to be fantastical and magical and adventure and exciting and all that kind of stuff. And these Harry Potter films, they do have their own soundtrack. You know, it's like a Lord of the Rings film. You're watching a Lord of the Rings film because of the way it sounds. You know, Harry Potter also has those tinkling magical sounds that the orchestra make. And he had to do that, make it sound familiar, then completely take it on a new path and a new direction, and also harking back to the time that it was at, 1920s America, which was just absolutely amazing thing for him to have done. And he does, and he sets up the scene, and he sets up that, you know, even just in the opening credits, you know, the very first song on the whole piece, you're listening to it and, you know, you're in for a magical ride. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but you do.
The main titles has one little nod to that Hedwig's Flight in it. And
that's right, and
that's it. He didn't repeat any other theme. So he had to make it sound like that, make it sound like a 20s gangster New York almost, and then not fall back on those themes.
Yep. And go on a new path.
Yeah. I think initially they were talking about putting more of your Harry Potter, which wouldn't have worked really. It's about a teenage boy. Well, this is about grown up adults with, like, they whip out their their wands in this movie like they're pulling out Tommy guns.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, and it's much darker. It's a lot more dangerous than, say, the first Harry Potter film, which all the other movies then build their themes on. So there's definitely a nod in there, but he had to argue and fight to keep that quite small. But I love the titles of this album because it just tells you what's going on. Oh, Tina taking you.
Some titles.
Yeah, yeah. So it starts with the main themes, and then there's Witches Among Us, and then...
Oh, good lot.
Tina takes Newt in. Oh, quite clearly, Newt got caught. Pie or strudel? Which would you like? I think he wants both. Credence hands out the leaflets. Inside the case. Inside the case is... Inside the case is where Newt goes down, and we see inside his case where he's got all these fantastic beasts and this whole interdimensional... It's like a TARDIS case, but they made it more ridiculous because it's just a suitcase and you have to climb in the lid. Inside the case is quite the lengthy track.
It's about 9 minutes or something.
It is. It's 9 minutes, which...
It's a lot of film to get through. It's a lot of setup to get through, and a lot of different themes and a lot of different music used in that as each creature is discovered. It's almost like each creature has its own little section of music to go with it, from the triumphant ones to the little mischievous ones, and they all, you know, they've all got their own little piece of music to go along with it, which is kind of fantastic.
Yeah, if I had... very fantastic, actually. If I had... to be nitpicky, and this is probably about the film as well, I probably thought that scene was a bit long. They could have cut it.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. But, I mean, you got to show off the Fantastic Beasts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and that track, for me, rolls on quite a bit. If I found myself nodding off at all in this album, it was probably...
Well, this is true as well. It's probably one of the lengthier, like that and the you know, towards the final scenes, you know, the Great Chase and all that kind of stuff where it all comes to a head. They're probably the two biggest scenes, because like all the rest of the pieces, they're only like, you know, 2-3 minutes long, but that's the length of time it needs to set up that bit of scene of the movie. Mm. So it's interesting in that a lot of it are orchestral builds in and out of the song piece. Pieces itself, a fade in and fade out almost orchestrally. So, like, it's there can be a little bit of a, you know, not a sameness to it, but it is a bit like that, where it's doing that part where it builds to the scene, and then you're having obviously the scene part, and then it fades down to the not seen part, you know. But all the other parts are fairly small, all things considered.
Oh, yeah, it does such a great job of painting the pictures, though. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to have not seen the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, what would be interesting would be to put the movie on and the sound and turn the dialogue off.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I wanted to do it. I ran out of time, but that's essentially what they do on the orchestral tours, isn't it? They put the movie up on the screen, then they have the orchestra play the music.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's done a few of those, hasn't he?
Well, only since this. Only since this.
Yeah, okay.
So he was encouraged to do this one, and I think he went on a tour and played the score, which is what Alex saw. Then I think he's gone and done retrospectives of his work because he's got such this massive body of it. And there's so many recognizable tunes. I keep just flashing back to that scene in The Fugitive where Harrison Ford jumps out of the water tube, you know, where him and Tommy Lee Jones finally confront each other. He's like, I didn't do it. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, I don't care. I'm going to get, you know, that scene. You know, it, like, he scored all that. And so this is going to be quality. And it is quality. Look, I didn't really want to listen to a movie sound. I did, and I enjoyed it. I had it on my car. I've listened to it a handful of times. Given the time between episodes, I probably should have listened to it a few more times. But I liked it. It really sort of opened my eyes. And just having to look up Mr. James Newton Howard sort of gave me a deeper appreciation for so much more. All these other films, and for that craft of songwriting.
Oh, God, yes. Like we were saying, you know, it's just so extensive. There wouldn't be a genre of film that he hasn't written an amazingly intense score for, in whatever way. If it's funny and comical like Space Jam, if it's bigger than Ben-Hur with King Kong or whatever, you know, like all of these things, they have their soundtrack and you know them in the back of your head from having seen the films, and he's had that kind of an impact with you, and the films wouldn't be as huge. Like, could you imagine Dark Knight without all of that amazing work behind it?
His stuff, when you look at it, this album being absolutely no exception, it really hones in on this, is so emotive. He's really doing a lot of work for each film. There's a lot of heavy lifting going on with the soundtrack.
Absolutely. Considering it all just starts with him in a room on his piano, looking at these pieces, looking at these characters, and just going, if I were to look at that person, what would he sound like? It's such a bizarre thing. such an amazing skill to have. Like, each character's got their own almost soundtrack that goes with them and their own theme, and he draws upon his ability to paint these pictures with your ear holes as well as your eye holes. It's amazing.
Hey, paint a picture with your ear hole. careful the paint doesn't get in your eye hole.
Just the one.
Just delicately brush the canvas with your eye. That's it. You know, if you're not blessed with long ones, get some extensions.
There's always a way.
So, tracks on this album. Did you, I just want to check, did you listen to the extended?
No, I only discovered about that, like, literally tonight. So, some were saying it wasn't super necessary. They were more filler pieces, but, you know, the bits that tied other bits together. So this was kind of like the greatest hits one that we'll listen to in the extended version.
The only,
is that right? Or
Yeah. But there's some... Okay, so you know when they go into the bar and they're making that deal with the dwarf god?
The underworld dwarf?
Yeah, the underworld, which is Ron Perlman.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It's gold. Original Hellboy. Original Hellboy, Ron Perlman. And there's the jazz singing that number. So those little bits are on here, and there's a couple of ragtime numbers and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
I thought they were actually worth listening to, and I did, but they were sort of interlude-y bits. So I will leave them out for now, but if you're going to get this album, I recommend getting the one with the bonus track, the deluxe edition. But we, for the purposes of this podcast, will talk about tracks 1 to 17, which start with the... main titles and end with the title. All right, standouts for you.
Standouts for me. I've got a few favorites in there. I did find with a lot of them didn't particularly grab me or take me to a certain spot that sort of made it memorable. They were just caught on kind of like more passing pieces of music, which is, you know, it's what you get when you're doing a movie. Of course, there's always those sorts of pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of my favorites, I mean, obviously, like, well, you have like the scenes like the bank scene with the little
the Niffler,
little dude
with the Niffler.
The Niffler, I love the Niffler. The Niffler is bloody awesome.
Yeah.
That was just the cutest thing in the world. But that's just such a mischievous little piece of music.
Oh, totally made that scene.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Other than the good CGI, the Niffler is cute.
It's super cute. That was amazing. I thought Inside the Case was great in complexity of it. You know, it was still one piece of music. It's still like you were still in that scene and in that journey and following him through the Fantastic Beasts and all of them. But yeah, like I was saying before, just the complexity of it and how each animal has its own theme. And I thought it all tied together really, really well. And it flowed with the scenery, of course, as you would expect with a piece of music for a movie. It was exciting because it just went through so many little transitions. I really dug that.
Yeah, okay, cool. For me, yeah, it's the bank one, the mischievous one, that was pretty cool. Pyle Strudel had a real sort of cool emotional thing. I really like Jacob. I really like that character. And,
oh, he's great, isn't
he? Yeah, the guy who played it. I just thought he's...
Dan Fogler? Dan Foglia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool. Such a grounding force in the film. Such a grounding character. So basically...
And a human character.
Yeah, very human. And anything that brought back memories of his scenes were the standouts for me. This is a very interesting part of listening to a movie soundtrack. If you've seen the movie and liked the film, is instantly back remembering some of those bits.
Yeah.
And the end where Newt says goodbye and Jacob's got a bakery.
Yep.
By the time I'd sort of got to that point in the listening, you know, I'm doing other things. I've sort of forgotten. They're doing the rooftop chase, which is track 13 through to 15, is all the end of the film. It sort of blazed over a bit listening to it.
Indeed.
Yeah, sort of mind started to wander. And when that came back in, I'm going, oh, yeah, that's that. Yeah, that was sort of cool and heartwarming, and I really liked that bit of the film. Interesting thing to do, to listen to a movie soundtrack like that.
It really was. And it was so complex, you know, there's so much to take in, there's so many scenes, some of it not so much. Just on the whole, there's so much to listen to. I mean, you're listening to a 97-piece orchestra all playing its own parts. If you can't do it with an orchestra, what can you do it with? They went deep in their resources.
Budget was 175 to 200 million.
That's insane, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, with a project like this, you're not want for resources. So if you want to put together two orchestras, you probably can. Probably wouldn't have helped having double tuba, but...
You can never have too much tuba.
They weren't making Jaws. They didn't need that much tuba.
True.
Yeah, so you do get cream of the crop and perfection and everybody working to do a good job. You don't get on this project. It doesn't matter who you are, clearly, with... The fact that this guy, with all the chops, had to put together a showreel and some ideas because he heard this was coming up. Sort of like it's not one of those things they would have put an open call out for.
No.
People would, you would just know that they were making this movie and that they were looking for a composer, and you basically had to go, yeah, I'm good enough, and put your hand up and come up with some themes and ideas and send it in.
Yep.
With the album, you're getting everything bar the film. Pretty much that simple. Like, it's quite whimsical. It's quite nostalgic to listen to a movie soundtrack after the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a thing as short-term nostalgia? I guess, like, Alex is, he'd grown up with it, and when did Fantastic Beasts even come out? It's not that, come on.
2016, it's not that old. 4 years, 5 years old.
5 years old. Yeah, can you have nostalgia at from 5 years ago? Can you? I mean,
you can have, is that the you right can have word? Anything you want, Tom. This is our podcast show. We'll have whatever the hell we want.
Well, then I deem it nostalgia.
Nostalgia.
Yeah, it's an interesting experience. Again, it's where this weird concept of a, I didn't think it was going to be this weird. But I think that comes with asking friends and acquaintances, hey, what's the thing that you really love? And them just blowing you away. With excellent suggestion.
Well, this is the thing. We wouldn't have listened to it if it hadn't have been suggested, and now we have. And here we are sitting with an amazing appreciation of wow, screenplays and orchestral pieces that go towards it, and the amazing James Newton Howard.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not really doing this justice. Yeah, I don't have the musical language to really in-depthly talk about.
I must admit, I was reading a review and, like, someone really picking the pieces apart, and, like, you're saying all of these words. I know some of these words when he's talking about, you know, quartet pieces and this, you know, the tinkering. I can't even recite the words they were using. They're all very orchestry.
Did he say oboe? Did he say oboe at one point?
There'll always be an oboe. There's always the sneaky oboe.
The oboe of doom.
The oboe of doom.
Yeah. Not going to profess to be that type of musical people. I certainly can't. I don't have a formal education in music. So it makes it difficult to talk about on that level. Was the, just out of interest, was that review overly positive or negative? Or couldn't you tell?
From a peer review, I guess it would be, they said it was sensational.
Ah, well, there you go. Then I guess that's all that matters. We could tell that it was quality.
Indeed.
Yeah. So let's do the rounds, Tim. Best track.
Indeed.
Best track for you. I mean, this is kind of cool because it's really open, because impossible to separate it from the film once you've seen it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, yeah, I kind of have two. I've kind of got, no, like, you know, the,
two.
The,
Two best tracks.
Well, they're both different and for different reasons. Like, really, towards the end of the film, obviously, this is the final part-ish where they're chasing down the baddie.
Mm.
Relieving Movie's Wand and, you know, was it? It's actually the biggest title. Relieving Movie's Wand, Newt releases the Thunderbird. There you go.
Ah, so you've gone for the hero moment, like the penultimate
hero, the hero moment
of the film, yeah.
Yep, and that was great. It was tension and release and dramatic and exciting and fantastical, and then the rains came down and the piece is quiet. It's a poignant piece. As I was saying before, you couldn't have the scenery without that dramatic, dynamic, explosive music. Just the things you'd expect to see or expect to hear, just done really, really well. So it's like that piece, and then, yeah, Inside the Case.
Inside the Case.
I really did like that. I thought it was magical. And so they're my two favourites.
Right. Well, I'm going to have to pick one, and I keep coming back to Pie or Strudel.
It's a lovely piece.
Yeah. It's fun. It's whimsical. It's like that. It's that first discovery of magic for the character of Jacob. Like, I just...
Yeah, it's all awe-inspiring for him, isn't it? You know, just seeing it there in the flesh, but like in a beautiful way.
And they couldn't have done it in a better way for that character. Food. His whole life's about it. And this magical dinner is being prepared. And it's that adds to his level of wonder. It's a genius bit of storytelling, really.
It really is. And it also introduces him to the other side of magic, which isn't all other than scary and monsters and chasing shit and all that kind of stuff. You know, this is the beautiful side of things. And yeah.
Which is the bit that sucks you in with all the Harry Potter stuff. The first bit you see like that, if we're going back to Harry Potter, is Harry and Ron on the train. And it's
just about to say that.
They get the sweet cart and all the fun bits in Harry Potter, like this Harry Potter, the universe and the whole arcing story, but it's all the little things like the chocolate frog that bounces around and the letter that screams at you and it's all those tiny little things that are fantastical for us, but they're amazing versions of the mundane.
Indeed.
All right, Tim. So I'm going to say that was quite a heartfelt sort of best tracks there. Tracks you don't care for. I'm not going to say worst tracks. I'm going to say tracks you'd skip. You'd skip if you're listening.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there was a couple of little ones like that. Like, you know, In the Cells was probably one that just kind of, because there was some pretty heavy dialogue going on in there and there wasn't really needed to be much set up for it. It was just a dark brooding piece that faded in and didn't really go anywhere and fade back out. But, you know, it's a tough one because they're not necessarily songs. I guess they kind of are songs you would skip. Yeah. The scheme of the whole piece of music, if you were to look at the entire soundtrack, they're sort of, they're all integral parts and they've all got their bit to play. But, yeah, in the Cells didn't really.
Kind.
Yeah, no. I bet you got a couple.
Well, actually, no. This will shock you. It's probably Inside the Case. It's
yep.
just a bit long for it.
Oh, yeah, there's
it sort
that.
Of meanders through and stuff, and that's fine. Maybe I have a bit of bias because maybe I wanted the case scene to be something different than it was.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. By about halfway through, I'm going, okay, cool, all right. And I would, if I was listening to it consciously, I would have skipped it, maybe.
Indeed.
Yeah, so controversy there. Mine's Inside the Case, and that was one of your best ones. That was one of your best ones.
It's all right. I'm going to look at you sideways next time I see you in the street.
Yeah, you should anyway. I can only be observed properly from the corner of one's eye. Okay, so Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's been an interesting trip, but the ultimate question, Tim, is this staying on your phone, on your listening device? Are you going to leave it on there and let it just turn up randomly on your when you hit shuffle?
I don't believe so, no. It doesn't really suit a lot of the other things that I listen to, just in the fact of what it is. I think it's been an amazing exploration, and I've definitely gained a deeper knowledge. Because it is something that you, whilst it's in the background and it's poignant to films that you've watched, you've never really, really analysed it or where it came from or the effort that went into making it or the genius behind it, you know. And for that, I appreciate it all. But like as a daily listen, nah, I don't think she's staying in there. Not for me.
Okay, fair enough. And I am going to, I have to agree with you. It doesn't quite hold the same place in my life, obviously, as it does for Alex, being some years older. For me, that movie is Blade Runner or something like that. The movie soundtracks I've owned before this have been songs from the movie, and it would be the Spawn soundtrack. Great soundtrack, crap movie.
I was going to say Spawn, yeah. Godzilla soundtrack.
Yeah, not even a, yeah, not particularly good movies, but I mean, this is a good movie with a great soundtrack. Diving into it, really, I think we've given it its due.
I think so.
And appreciate it. Absolutely appreciate it. Is it going to stay on my phone? Probably not. You know, but if the occasion arises and the, I don't know, kids are feeling whimsical or something like that, chuck it on. Might just go, oh, yeah, here you go. Fantastic Beasts coming at you.
Maybe it will stay on your phone then.
I mean, I know where to find it now. Like,
That's it.
I mean, like, I know where to find it. I know, and I know. Oh, yeah, that track. Dude. Yeah, cool. Any final words?
Yeah, no, I think that was it was an amazing piece of music. It was an amazing film. It was great to revisit it. I saw it when it came out.
Did you actually watch it again these last couple of weeks?
I did.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. I did. I sat down and rewatched it last night, actually. And just to get a bit more of a piece to it, and because I obviously listened to it without, and to sort of piece it all back together again was just reaffirming. And it was great to revisit it.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Oh, well, with that, I think we'll end the show. Hey, if you've got an album that you really love and you want us to really love it too, you can email us albumspod@gmail.com. Other than that, we will see you on the next Albums. Bye.
Bye-bye.